Iowa football is near and dear to my heart, just as it is for so many people across this great nation. In my time since being a part of the Iowa community, I've had the chance to meet and get to know so many great men that have worn the black and gold and share in my love for this team. The fact of the matter is that I bleed black and gold, and I'm bringing to you the stories of the men that have the same blood coursing through their veins. I'm Colin Cole, and this is Legends of Kinnick.
Hello, Hawk fans. This is your man, Colin Cole, coming to you with another episode of Legends of Kinnick. I'm glad again to have an opportunity to speak with another legend on today's show because, obviously, this is just a great opportunity to talk to men that have donned that black and gold, have left their indelible mark on the program, and continue to do great things today as they moved away from the Kinnick Stadium. But however, their time at Kinnick is what we're here to highlight, and love being able to talk to these men about their experiences. I always get a great tidbit and get some great knowledge about the program. So here we go. We're going to jump right into this one. My next guest grew up in St. Louis, Missouri, and attended Kirkwood High School. He lettered in basketball and track, but it was on the gridiron that my next guest found the most enjoyment. As a Kirkwood Bulldog, he earned all-conference accolades on the field, but even more impressive was the fact that he made the academic honor roll every semester throughout his prep career. My guest came to Iowa and took his time settling in after struggling with an early foot injury. However, in just two years as a full-time starter, he racked up some staggering statistics with 150 tackles, 33 tackles for loss, and 22 sacks, and that's just those 2 years. He was a team captain in 1996, his senior year, and an honorable mention All-Big Ten player to go along with being an academic all-conference selection. My guest graduated with his college degree in health promotion and business after his junior year and fulfilled that final year with the Hawks as a team captain while attending grad school. After a short stint in the NFL, he returned to Iowa City to work on both Hayden Fry and Kirk Ferentz's staffs as recruiting coordinator and is arguably responsible for the mass upgrade that came to Hawkeye football early in Ferentz's career at Iowa. He then turned to coaching, which he's been doing ever since with stops at UNI, Colorado, San Diego, with Iowa legend Chuck Long. Cincinnati, in the NFL with the Buffalo Bills, and back down to college football with Indiana and currently Fresno State's defensive coordinator. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the show, Bill Ennis Inge.
Good to be here, Colin.
Hey, it's great to have you on, sir. Great to have you on. Thank you for joining me. So I want to say, first and foremost, thank you for all that you've done for the program, all things considered. And I honestly, you know, I would have to I put you in the spirit of one of the men that helped me when I got to the University of Iowa to make my transition, being an out-of-state recruit coming to Iowa from Florida. It was definitely a transition that was not the easiest, but a number of African-American student athletes, football players come to the university from various communities, and it's a difficult transition. But, you know, I want to give you the credit as one of the men that really helped me, because I struggled my first year in terms of transitioning and assimilating from, you know, being in Florida, being a comfortable place, to coming to Iowa. So thank you first and foremost for that, man. And, you know, let's talk a little bit about what your role was at Iowa. And let's talk, before we get to that, your time at Iowa and what your journey has bring and how you've gotten to where you are now.
Well, Colin, probably one of the most important things or one of the most important lessons that I learned at Iowa during my time had to deal with unity or unification or team. And that probably led me to doing what I was able to do for you and a lot of other individuals that came into the program. Because when you think about the concept of team, it's about unity. And all of us that came from different backgrounds, different homes, different locations with respect to the region that we're from, everyone was going to have to deal with some form of a transition coming into Iowa City, where we all love that black and gold. So I took it personal for me and my role when I got done as a player to do everything I could to help you all in your transition coming, where you're coming from bigger cities into a college town, or you're coming from scenarios where you saw maybe more people that may have looked like you to not as many people now that may look like you. And I just took it kind of personal to do everything I could to help you all transition. But probably more important is I wanted us to be able to be in a scenario where we can really think about being other-centered. And I think, Colin, you can remember some of the things that we would always do just when it came to things in the community. Because if we could keep our mind off of us and keep our mind on things that are bigger than us, usually our transitions were going to be okay. And that's something that I literally have lived by in all of my years of coaching and all of my years of living.
I would definitely agree with that, especially as it pertains to anybody coming into an environment where you are the minority, right? Mm-hmm. A lot of times, men like myself come from environments where you're the majority, you're comfortable, you're in a place where, you know, you're used to the community, you're used to the environment, and you go to a place like Iowa City, and it's tough because there are not a lot of people that look like you. There are not a lot of people, especially outside of the football program. There are not a lot of people that look like you, and it's cold, especially a guy like me being from Florida. It's cold, it's snow, you know, it's all these different factors that come into effect. But, you know, being able to lean on those gentlemen that have, or those men that have been there and have the experience and can say, hey, you know, I understand. It was difficult for me too. It will get easier for you. I think those things definitely what helped me in my transition, like you talked about. Now, you got to Iowa City from St. Louis. You know, it was a little bit of transition for you as well. Talk to me a little bit about what those early years were like being a part of the Hawkeye program and how that kind of led into you having such a great career down the stretch.
Okay, well, it's so funny, Colin, because when you talk about what program history and tradition is all about, this is kind of what I got to experience when I got to Iowa City. Okay, first, I had a coach. His name was Richard Bass. He was a running back for the university. And he, in a sense, helped me with the foundation of understanding what work is going to have to be about. Okay, then when I got to school, there were some older players on the team. And when you think about just Dayton Hughes, a wide receiver, Marvin Lampkin, a running back, and Marvin Lampkin was from East St. Louis, so we weren't far from each other from a growing up standpoint. Mm-hmm. On defense, we had guys like Larry Blue and Bo Porter who were older that did exactly for me and us what I did for you, Colin. They just helped us make the transition. Mm-hmm. They told us about the hurdles that you have to get ready to overcome, the things you have to get ready to do, and exactly what the brotherhood was truly all about. And when you have the ability to come into a program and you have that history that is there for individuals that came from places that are different than yours, further away, obviously, with you being from Miami, I was just, you know, 4 hours away, but there were individuals who were from Florida, from Texas, from New Jersey, and everyone had endured the same challenges, the same journeys, but we all had one thing in common. We all played on the same football team and we called each other brothers. And that you have to take personal, because when you talk about our brotherhood that we have in black and gold, that does not mean the color that you are. It didn't matter if you were white, black, brown, whatever the case may be. If you were wearing black and gold, you were part of the brotherhood. And that is truly one of the best things that I got to experience in life at my point in time, because I hadn't really seen that before. Often you see so much separation, and to be able to experience togetherness, I really commend our coaches who really establish that foundation for us all, because that's why we do what we do today. I know on my end, that's truly why I coach.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That makes sense. I mean, the relationships are obviously the biggest part of, you know, what these young men take away from their experience while they're at the university level. Can you tell me, you had the opportunity to play for Coach Fry, and then later you had the opportunity to be on his staff, and that opportunity kind of led to the opportunity with within Kirk's staff as well. So, can you talk a little bit about us, a little bit about your experience with Coach Fry and what that relationship meant to you or means to you to this day?
Okay, well, here is the epitome of Coach Fry. I can remember when he and Coach Ted Gill, who was the local recruiting coach, came to my home. What was unique is I first remembered seeing a coach from the University of Iowa, and Colin, my memory is probably crazy because I can remember this like it was yesterday. I'm sitting in my high school coach's office. His name is Dale Collier. There is a coach that is in there from the University of Iowa. I couldn't remember his name, but I sure remember that he was left-handed. You know, a younger coach, he said he worked kind of with the offensive line. This was my sophomore year. Mm-hmm. Well, that was Coach Ferentz.
Wow. Okay.
I remember to this day as he wrote me a letter that he was left-handed with me being a lefty. Mm-hmm. So a year later, now here they come to my home recruiting me. And at the time it was Coach Gill. I was like, gosh, I can remember. You know, there was another coach who was here, but obviously, as you know, Coach Ferentz, he was gone at the time. But Coach Fry came into our home and he just told my mom that, hey, you know what? When this young man gets into our program, we're going to take care of him. And when we're done, he's going to be a great man that's going to be an asset to society. He's going to know how to work, and he's going to really understand what loving people is all about. And that at that point in time, he had my mom wrapped all around his fingers. Because from a spiritual standpoint, that's all she was looking for. Mm-hmm. She didn't care too much for me being in sport. All she wanted was to make sure when I'm done with whatever I was doing, that I was going to be very attentive, be an asset to society, and care about other people.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how the journey started. The one thing that is unique, and I know you know exactly about this, even though the University of Iowa was just about 4.5 hours from where we were in Kirkwood in St. Louis, mm-hmm. I had never experienced such cold weather in my life the first time I got it.
Oh, wow. That's wow. It's definitely a different kind of cold up there. That's for sure. It's definitely yes. Something that's to be reckoned with. And you know, the further north you go, the harder it is. Especially, I guess, once you cross that river, that's a part of what that whole transition is. Once yes. you get across
when,
there,
when they talk about the hawk, I know right. exactly what
they're talking about. Right. Okay. So. You touched on a little bit with your mom and everything. What did your faith? How did your faith play a factor into your experience while you were there to this day? How did that help mold you?
Well, my freshman year, I literally endured something that maybe a lot of people don't know about. I know a lot of people who were there with me know, but my body was poisoning itself my freshman year. So come to find out I had a kidney problem. So I had to get a kidney removed. Mm. And there was one person, man, that to this day, I literally love him. And I'm thankful for what he did. And he was the individual on our campus with the Federation of Christian Athletes, the FCA, and his name is Jim Goodrich.
Yeah, I know
Jim. He's still back there. I can remember there were days when he would try to find me and I would try to duck and dodge. And he would just keep coming. He was very persistent. And finally, one day in September, the Lord allowed us to be able to meet. That's truly where my life began to change. Because how I saw things, I don't think I was seeing them as clearly as I could have, you know, mm-hmm. Without there being a truly clear lens when it comes to having some eyes for the Lord. So he really helped open up another window for me. And I think, as you remember, the meetings that we would have when you were in school, that's truly where all that came from, just some of the things that he happened to give for me and do for me. Because he asked the one question, you know, if you were to go today, you know, how sure are you that you're going to go to heaven? And at the time, you know, I didn't know. You know how you always have those moments of uncertainty. You just don't know. And through some of the meetings and some of the things that we were able to do with him, he really helped enhance my spiritual foundation as a person when I was 18 years old. And I knew about the Lord, I knew about some of the spirituality things, but I wasn't grounded, let's say. And that's something that coming into adulthood that I greatly appreciate that I got to experience during my years.
Yeah, I would definitely say that Jim and, I mean, the Lord obviously is a base and a strength and a rock. And Jim has always been a great man to seek out men and individuals to bring them to the meetings and talks and everything of that nature. Great, great, great man. And also has done a great job in leadership and friendship for a number of men that have come through that program over the years. So. Yep. I would have to say that you're spot on and one of the other support systems that is there at the university. So since you got done playing, you decided to go back into coaching. What was the underlying, what made you want to do that? What made you want to get into coaching in the first place? And you've had a long career up to this point, almost 20 plus years of coaching. So what was your motivating factor? What made you want to get into coaching?
You know, and again, it's when you endure adversity, okay? Going into my senior year, I probably had dealt with the most challenging incident in my life at that point in time, outside of, you know, when I was a freshman having my kidney removed. But in April, going from my junior year to my senior year, my father passed away. Well, seeing what my position coach at the time, who's Bob Elliott, seeing what he did for me and seeing how consistent he was just as a person and the things he did for everyone, that really motivated me to want to get into coaching. And that's kind of how the spark began, if you want to say there was an incident, you know. And there were times when, once I was recruiter coordinator, when you all were there, I can remember sitting down having a conversation with Coach Ferentz, saying, "Hey, you know, something I think I may want to coach. Mm-hmm. He says, "Hey, there is a job that's open at Northern Iowa." He and Coach Ferentz and Bob Elliott called Mike Dunbar at the time and said, "Hey, I think we'll be to try to get let you look into this if this is what you want to do." And that's how my coaching journey began. And I didn't know I was going to have to interview, let's say, three times for the job, because, you know, Coach Dunbar was there and then he left. And then Jay Neiman, who is currently at Iowa, he was there for as defense coordinator for the time being. And then Mark Farley came in and I went and interviewed with him. Coach Neiman and I make this funny joke where on Valentine's Day, we interviewed at a Village Inn up in Waterloo.
Oh, wow. Wow. Okay.
Yeah, you know, and that's kind of how my coaching journey began, where when you have mentors that could help you open a door, I'm very appreciative of it and have never forgotten about it. Mm-hmm.
So that definitely speaks very much to who you are as a man and the interest that you have in mentoring and being in young men's lives, so on and so forth. And well, in your opinion, and I would love to know, what is the most gratifying thing that you get from doing what you're doing right now?
You know, probably the most gratifying thing that we can receive, Colin, is the appreciation from some individual that has had to overcome some form of an adversity or obstacle. And you know that he is stronger or he is better for it, and that you have had a chance to make our world better by helping this individual out. Mm-hmm. And often the player doesn't see it right now. They may not see it until they're done, or until they have their family, or, you know, until they're gone. Then they see all of the lessons that you tried to show them as they're growing from a young boy to becoming a man, or they're learning how to become very responsible. And some of it could just be, Colin, just understanding how to manage your credit card.
Yeah.
You know, really just making sure that you don't blow your credit, or just paying your bills, or just being where you need to be, or making sure you understand the importance of being on time, or how it's funny. Today, it's called your brand. But as you know, back when we were in college, it was just how you represent yourself. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
You know,
yep.
And the social media piece has come into play today. But years ago, it was just more of the individuals that you can try to create and build and hope that in the end of the day, that when I have a chance to meet my Lord, he can say, job well done, my good and faithful servant. And that's truly how we live.
I hear that. Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, I mean, I can hear the passion. I can hear the energy. I can hear it in you, man. And I know that these young men couldn't achieve a quarter of the things they did without you and men like you who are willing to step in there and fulfill that role for them wherever they are and meet them wherever they are in their journeys. So that's the coaching side of it. Talk to me about your playing time in Iowa. What comes to mind when you think back on those times? What's the first game or moment or situation or anything when you think back to your time at Iowa? What's that one thing that comes back to your mind, if not two, three things that come back to your mind right away?
Well, you know, probably the first thing, let's say it may be the first home game. And this is when times were a little bit different, okay? Our first home game, our nation, kind of like we're dealing with the coronavirus, it was dealing with one of the worst hurricanes that you could ever experience. You may remember this when Hurricane Andrew hit, Colin. Mm-hmm. You were probably younger back in 1992.
Mm-hmm.
But Hurricane Andrew hit, and as you remember, it just destroyed everything down there in the Miami, Florida area.
Oh, yeah.
So right. We were playing Miami Hurricanes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
So they came, and they were in Iowa early. And this was the Miami Hurricanes with the that they would show up with their camo fatigues and doing flips, and it was everything that we saw kind of on TV.
Mm-hmm.
and it was real. And for me to have a chance to see how some of their guys played on defense, that was motivation, because they had Michael Burrow, Darren Smith, you know, Rusty Medeiros, Darren Crime, and they had a guy by the name of Warren Sapp, who he wasn't even playing yet.
Mm.
You know, He wasn't good enough. That's how good their defense was.
That's fine. That's wild. That is wild. That is wild.
So and that was my first game in Kinnick Stadium.
Mm. Damn, yeah. That's crazy. I didn't know that. That's crazy.
Yep. That was my first game as a college student athlete in Kinnick Stadium. Prior to that, we played in the Kickoff Classic, where we played in the Meadowlands, where we went to New Jersey. We played in the Giants Stadium. We played against North Carolina State.
Okay.
But it was so our first game was against the Miami Hurricanes.
Mm, that's funny. I know Darren Crine. He was a strength coach for Seattle Seahawks when I was there. That's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
That's wild. But all things considered, I mean, that's a heck of a memory right there. Is there a hit? There were some games where I saw that you really just destroyed folks. Wisconsin in 1996. It was, when you talk about Kinnick Stadium, we talk about that energy. There's no other place like it. There's nothing else like it.
There's nothing else
like Iowa City. No. It's like you talk about. It's a college town. What about your experience in Iowa City? What comes to mind? What do you remember the most? What do you have the fondest memory about?
Well, you're probably the fondest memories, Colin, is just the times that you had enjoying hanging out with your teammates.
Mm-hmm.
And some it might have been, let's say, some of them may have been just the times when you had a chance to go hang out at the field house or the rec center, the basketball gym, because a lot of the people played basketball.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we had one of the best intramural basketball teams that may have ever come through the university, called the franchise. And we absolutely loved it.
Mm-hmm.
But the fond memories, Colin, just all the brotherhood items that you had when you get to hang out with your teammates. And again, things that came up in 1994 when the floods happened, which we didn't know if you went on campus, if you're going to be able to get back onto the other side of campus.
Mm.
Because the river coming through the middle of campus was so high, they began to close all the bridges.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or when the summertime came around, I want to say summer 94, 95, when the O.J. Simpson thing happened, like we were all together. When the O.J. driving in the Bronco, you know, all those things happened.
Yes.
But it, It's just the memories probably for us would have been those Fridays during the summer when it was at its hottest point of the day. And we had young leaders at this time, and I'm going to give him some credit, Tim Dwight, at the time. Everyone knows on Fridays that were coming through the lifting program, you were always going to have a stadium step finisher. So you would work from 5 all the way up to 12 in the stadium. So those Fridays when it was baking hot, and all you could do is think about the work that you have to put in. And you were dreading if someone ever said sudden change, because that meant that you would never get a break when you got to the bottom. You had to literally start back up and go up the next one.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
And we knew that work that we were going to put in was going to be the work that was going to allow us to be able to earn a championship. What we did not know is the work that we were putting in that was just strengthening our brotherhood relationships and brotherhood friendships. Absolutely. Those are the indirect things that I think that this great sport gives you when you have the ability to endure tough situations as team members, as teammates, and as friends.
I would say that that's what brings the strongest bonds between men, women, and the like, is competition between sports, as well as when you're, for those that that have the opportunity to serve in the military, those folks that are going through similar struggles, that fight their ways through together, is what builds those bonds. And I would say that the strongest relationships I have were still with the friends that I played with back in college and even in the NFL, is that, you know, it's those people that go through very much similar struggles that you go through and kind of lean on each other, rely on each other to get through them. It was build those bonds. So playing under Coach Hayden Fry, talk to us a little bit about the relationship you had with him and what that was like, being able to play for a legendary coach like Hayden.
It was awesome, because the one thing you knew at the end of the day, Coach Fry loved you. And he wasn't afraid to tell you that. Now, if you were someone who didn't do what you were supposed to do, or you were not adhering to your capabilities or your potential, he would also let you know that as well. And when I think of Coach Fry, I think of accountability. Now, and it's funny getting the chance to see him on the coaching side when I got into coaching versus the player side. There was a difference, in which it should be. Sometimes if you didn't do what you're supposed to do, one of his favorite terms was, I'm going to stick my foot up your giggy. And if not right, I'm going to stick it up there sideways. Mm-hmm. Well, you knew that you had to get yourself in order. Mm. And that was just out of the great care that he had for you. And I think everyone knew that you would give up everything you could to be able to make him look good. And that's what you want to do as leaders, as individuals in a program, and as individuals who were part of something that is bigger than you. You knew that he was going to be able to fight and do everything he could to make your experience be great. And in a sense, Colin, from a leadership standpoint, that's all you can ask for, is someone that's going to be able to help you accomplish the mission. And that's what I greatly appreciate from Coach Fry. And he was always the man of his word. If he said he was going to do something, he was going to do it. If he could not, he would tell you. I can remember there was a big thing going on, maybe in 93, Colin, when we were looking at getting our new facility upgrades. Well, it was supposed to happen, let's say, I don't remember the exact dates, but let's say it was supposed to happen when we came back after Christmas break, after the bowl game. They were going to start on the new facility. Mm-hmm. Well, that didn't happen right when we got back. So when we came back in our team meeting, he told us all, hey fellas, we know we're going to get a new facility. We talked about it happening right now. Things are a little backed up. It may not happen until we get through the spring. That's just one incident where as a player, you getting active communication from your coach, that just gave us more buy-in, because you knew that he really appreciated you as a person.
Yeah.
The one thing I took pride in, just for me, is I never wanted to be in his office unless I was going to say hello. Because if you had to go into his office and the door shut, I don't know what happened, but I never wanted to find out.
That's a good point. Nobody ever wants to find out what those conversations are like. It's never any fun, that's for sure, because you typically come out with some sort of punishment, and it's not going to be anything that you want to deal with. So,
yes, yes.
So that's, you touched on Coach Fry's relationship. You touched on a lot of things. If there was a memory that you typically wouldn't tell anybody about, a story about your time while you were there, would you be able to share something with us about your relationships with the guys or your time while you were there? Something specific, something unique that comes to mind?
Let me see here. Things that, so when you were there, the cold plunge was in the locker room, right?
Yep.
Oh, okay. All right. So the new locker room area that it opened up, everyone knew after workouts, you know, you were on a Friday after doing all the stadium steps, it was so hot outside, you had to come in and get into the cold plunge. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, Russ Haynes and the training staff and Ed Crowley, whoever the trainers were, someone was always assigned to have to be in the locker room, mm-hmm. you know, just because players were getting in a cold plunge. Mm-hmm. Well, Eric Hilgenberg caught a full body cramp inside the cold tub. So he went underwater. We didn't know if he was drowning. We didn't know if he was playing around. No one knew it until afterwards. And his whole body went into cramp mode.
Wow.
When he was in the cold tub. And if a trainer would not have been in the locker room at that point in time and guys pulled him out of the water, it's no telling what the story would have ended up looking like in the end of the day.
Wow. That's wild.
Oh, man, it's just so, like, okay, that's one thing. Now, I think we all know there are individuals that we all love in the program that have been there for a long time, like Greg Morris in the equipment room.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, okay. You know, I have a chance to, and this is something most you may know this, Colin, but ever since I left in 1999, every game day Saturday, I talk to someone in the program.
Mm.
Every Saturday since 1999. Okay. I'm going to say probably for the first 15 or 16 years, it was I would talk to John Streiff.
Mm,
and then when he retired, I talked to Greg Morris. But and this is every Saturday, whether I'm playing a game or the Hawks are playing a game, every Saturday during the fall we communicate.
That's awesome. Well,
we would always just make fun of Greg because we would always think that, hey man, you know, let us get some more socks, man. Mm-mm.
Nope.
You know, hey, let us. But you know what? I tell you what. Him, and I told him this years ago, I said, just him being able to say no humbled people to where, as individuals, you don't have that sense of entitlement.
Yeah,
that's something you see today. Everyone always has that sense of entitlement. But when you say no, they're not ready yet.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing just how some of those instances just can help create better people. And I told him, I said, Greg, I thank you because you saying no allowed a lot of people to be humbled because some of us, you were used to being able to get what you wanted or whatever you asked for.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So, you know, so being able to be humbled or quote unquote being able to be put in place, those are some things that are necessary, and we can laugh about it today. Back then, we never wanted to laugh about it.
No doubt. It was a lot of frustration with Greg. It was seemed like it was a ration going on with all of the equipment. That's for sure.
Oh man, hey, he's like a ration.
Yes.
And then about that sale that goes on in the springtime and all this extra equipment is out there for sale.
All of a sudden, right? You got all this stuff all of a sudden. Okay.
Yeah.
We need some extra money, I guess.
Yeah. Another scenario, and maybe the individuals on the team know this, but it would have been 1996 in September. And if I'm not mistaken, Colin, like there was so much stuff that was going on at this time because it would have been around, we played September the 14th, we played Tulsa of 1996. And the reason I remember this is because it was Friday, September 13th, okay? Here are some of the things that happened. Unfortunately, on our campus, Colin, they had a fraternity party, and I think some individuals drank a little too much and were not able to make it.
Mm.
Also, that was the same weekend that Tupac, it was either Tupac or Biggie, someone was killed out in Vegas.
96, that would have been Big Tupac.
Okay, and you couple that with us playing Tulsa. So we actually stayed in Iowa City on campus, flew to Tulsa that day. We get to Tulsa, we don't have our jerseys for the game.
Oh wow.
Yeah, it was our first away game. Our away games had not come back. I think it was Reebok, if I'm not mistaken. Our away games hadn't come in yet.
Wow.
Literally, our jerseys come in about an hour before the game. They're giving them to us in the locker room.
Mm.
Like, they're calling out numbers. So you kind of have to stand out. So your names weren't on the back. I mean, literally, they were brand new, coming out of the box.
Mm.
And I can just remember me and Ross Verber, one of the other captains, we're just cracking up laughing like, hey, man, we're actually here at this game. We flew in here today, and it was blazing hot outside in Tulsa, Oklahoma during that weekend in September. And we were potentially going to have to play in our black jerseys for that.
Yeesh, that's a tough one right there. Yeesh.
Yeah.
Man, that is wild. I mean, there's a reason why you don't travel the day of game out of town. It's probably you guys lucked up on that one. You guys might have been out there having to wear some Hanes T-shirts if they didn't get that thing together.
Man. Where did we get our Hanes on?
That's what it was going to have to be. And let's go ahead and Sharpie on some numbers.
Yeah, and there were some other individuals that we had in our program. Just let's say when we're younger, you know how unfortunately. We called it character building. And you know how all the upperclassmen in your program, they kind of run the program and they show you the ropes.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yep.
Okay, so our defensive line was probably – our defensive line and O-line our freshman year, they would be the quote-unquote the runners of the football team. Like, you couldn't do anything without asking that, let's say, especially as a freshman. I mean, from when you left the field – you had to wait because you had to carry somebody's shoulder pass off the field.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And typically it may have been an older person at your position, but they would tell you, hey, Inns, you got to carry Collins stuff off the field today. Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. All right, good. And you could have had the best practice in your life. Coming off the field, you're still going to be humbled by having to carry somebody's helmet and shoulder pads.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no question.
Now, if you did not, if they called you, you were just taking chances. So if you did not, and you could get into the locker room and out of the locker room before they came, you basically lived to fight another day.
Yeah, well, that's funny. That's funny. Yeah, that's a tradition. That's an age-old tradition now.
Yeah, if you did not make it out of the locker room in time, you can read in between the lines.
that cold plunge might get a little bit more full then.
Yes, hey, believe me, being from St. Louis, I was so appreciative because I knew there was two people I could never upset. If I took care of Mike Wells, who was on the defensive line, he would always take care of me. If I with him being from St. Louis, if I always took care of him, there were times I would literally volunteer myself to go take his pads in the locker room myself because I knew if I could keep him off of other people, we were going to be okay. But I knew he would see me doing these good gestures to where if I ever got in a bind, he would take care of me because we were both from St. Louis.
There it is.
And sure enough, that's what you call establishing friendships and relationships. And that's where truly where the brotherhood came into play, Colin.
That's right. Absolutely. Man, you know, and I think that people understand, you know, talk about football and the life lessons that come along with it. There's so many opportunities to really speak about how football really just the environment and all the aspects that come along with football, how it kind of forces folks to change and get outside of their comfort zone and be different from who they are and who they've been. So, you know, we're all attached to this brotherhood in one way or form or fashion. And it's all, like I've said, and like you said, the relationships that are garnered over that amount of time are really those ones that last a lifetime because of the fact that for that short period of time, you and that guy next to you were pretty much the same thing. There was no race. There was no gender. There was none of the things that differentiate people. It was all black and gold. That's all it was, and that's what it's about.
And I think, Colin, with what we're experiencing in our world today, as we've been seeing, it would be great if a lot of people had the opportunity to just endure being able to be involved in a team sport.
Yes.
Because you see how critical it is when it comes to molding individuals from different backgrounds, different places, different socioeconomic statuses, different races. And today it could be different genders, but everybody's working for the same common goal.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And you have to put your ego aside. And for example, here's another incident. I wouldn't even say incident. Okay, we're in the locker room our freshman year. Okay, our defensive back from Dallas, Texas, Billy Coates from Grand Prairie, he's talking about how he can play the guitar. Okay, one of the senior defensive linemen here says, "You play guitar." He says, "Oh man, we need to say something to Mike Ferroni, who was one of our senior offensive linemen."
Oh boy.
And he could bench press 600 pounds. So he goes and gets him. Mike comes in and says, "What's going on?" And they said, "Hey, Billy Coates says he can play the guitar." Ferroni says, "Hey, you know what? I can play it too. Maybe, hey, let's try to get together and let's see if we can play some songs."
Mm-hmm.
So they ended up saying, "Hey, this is what we're going to do. Tomorrow, this is Mike Ferroni saying, hey, and this is an upperclassman saying, I'm going to come over to the dorms and we're in Slater Hall and we'll play the guitar." They were in the hallway playing the guitar half the night. We're like, "Man, y'all got to stop this, man. We got to go to sleep."
That's awesome.
You know, and here you have two players. Mike Ferroni is from New Jersey, a senior offensive lineman who's getting ready to go to the NFL. Billy Coates is a 17/18-year-old true freshman from Grand Rapids. Those are the bonds that can be created just with one incident of someone having something fairly similar.
That's amazing. And those are the bonds that are created, you know, because a lot of times those seniors will take a young freshman under their wing and, you know, help them show them the ropes. And honestly, that's what helps a lot of guys like myself coming, you know, bright eyed guy who's scared of what the environment is. But, you know, you have guys like Anthony Heron or Ed Sadat or, you know, Tariq Holman or any number of guys who, you know, can kind of speak to that, or who kind of took me under their wing to kind of help me adjust to that first couple of years. Without that, who knows where the situation is, you know?
And as you know, Colin, if you have someone that's going to help you, quote unquote, adjust, and this transition is becoming your new home, you don't realize that you're away from home.
Mm-hmm. That's right. It becomes home.
You know, and that's kind of what it was. There's another scenario we had that there's only three people that know about this, Colin. So this could be something new. Mark Mitchell, one of our linebackers. You know, he's from Iowa City. It was cold outside. It wasn't snowing yet, but it was cold in the fall. We were in an engineering class, and unfortunately, he rides his motorcycle all the time. Mm-hmm. So think about this. We're in the engineering class, and there's three people, and we got to get from the engineering building back over toward the complex in the Carver Hawkeye Arena.
Mm.
So there was three people on his motorcycle.
Mm. We gonna make this work, man. Don't worry about it. We gonna make this work.
Hey, the person in the middle was the warmest.
I bet he was. May have been slightly uncomfortable, but he was
on the back mark on the front end, and we're trying to hold on.
Right.
Hey, whatever you do, just don't sway side to side.
I've seen a similar concoction in the streets of Iowa City before. It's quite the sight to behold.
Oh, man.
Especially we're talking about football players. We're not talking about regular student body. We're talking about guys who are muscularly built individuals, kind of huddled on a moped or a motorcycle. That's difficult.
Years later, when that movie Dumb and Dumber came out, riding that moped, and they're squished together, that is, I can remember us sending a text message when it came out, like, "Man, this was us back in 1993.
I was not going to say it, but that's the image that popped into my head immediately, is Dumb and Dumber Floyd hanging on. And he's like, he's like, oh, I got to pee. He's like, oh, just go ahead for it. Go ahead. And he's like, oh, yeah, I feel it. That's,
they stuck together, man. Yeah,
that's literally.
They created the special bond.
Literally. Literally. Well, with that, Bill, I'm going to go ahead and say you're off the hot seat. My friend, it's been an amazing opportunity having you on the call and having you on the show. You have a great, great range. You've done a great job. Continued success wish to you and in your coaching career. Currently, you're the defensive coordinator over there at Fresno State. Very happy for you and hope that you continue to mold these young men's minds and all the while representing the black and gold, man.
That's what it's all about, Colin. On Iowa, go Hawks.
That's right. That's right. Thanks again, Bill, and go Hawks.
Thank you for joining me for another episode of Legends of Kinnick. You can stream or download the show on Podomatic, Apple Podcasts, iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, among others. I'm Colin Cole. Go follow Legends of Kinnick on all social media platforms. Take care and go Hawks.